Hello, welcome to Black Spine Gamecast, a new podcast all about gaming with me, Simon, and my friend here.
Giles. Stupid name. sorry. Yes, here we are. We have arrived. This seems like it's been coming for years.
Quite a long time.
Yes.
When in fact it's been months.
Months. I don't even know. I don't even know anymore.
Days, hours, light years.
So I guess we should start by saying that we're both games developers for quite a while now. So generally what we do is we start by talking about what we've been playing. Then we follow up with some news, some industry news, right? Industry news, we obviously haven't got time to cover everything, but we select, we cherry pick, right?
Some
interesting stories that we think can be talked about. And then after that, we tend to have some sort of topic of the show, maybe Q&A, if you guys leave questions. That's also cool. Is that it? Have I missed something?
I think that's it.
Cool.
I think that's it. We may as well get on with it for the first ever Black Spine.
It's history.
It's history in the making. Now. Black Spine Gamescast.
The first ever episode one.
Christ. Wow, what a start.
Yeah,
amazing.
Great.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. How long? I don't even know. Is anyone timing this? I don't know how long we've been going. Yeah. I don't know how long we're going to be going. Right, sorry. You asked me what I'd been playing.
What have you been playing, Charles?
Right, so as I'm sure many of our listeners and yourself have out there, I have a massive backlog of games. Right now I've been playing, I'm late to the party, super late to the party, but I just finished Pillars of Eternity.
Yep.
Which was, it's fucking amazing. Anyone out there who has not played Pillars of Eternity, who likes sort of story-driven RPGs with deep lore, I would definitely recommend it. It's super cheap now, I think. Sometimes it's in the Humble Bundle. I think that's where I got it.
Do you normally like classic RPGs? Like, do you like... because Pillars of Eternity, when I played it for the brief time that I played it, is quite a stark reminder of the classic Baldur's Gate style. Essentially the D&D games.
Yeah, so for anyone who doesn't know, actually, so Pillars of Eternity is made by a company called Obsidian, who... made Fallout New Vegas and the first South Park RPG, Stick of Truth. They kickstarted Pillars of Eternity. They have some lineage with a company called Interplay, which used to make a lot of these kind of games. They kickstarted Pillars of Eternity, and it was, like you say, a return to the tabletop, style. Western RPG, like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale and all those kind of things. And interestingly, I'm not a PC gamer, I'm a console gamer, whereas my co-host here, Simon, is a PC gamer primarily, which means I kind of missed all that stuff first time.
Yeah.
So I've never played Baldur's Gate or Icewind Dale or... all of the many others.
Neverwinter Nights came.
Neverwinter Nights,
later,
of course.
So
I missed them all. So actually, as soon as I finished Pillars of Eternity, I bought Pillars of Eternity 2, Baldur's Gate 2 Remastered, and Divinity and Divinity 2, just because on the strength of that game type alone.
Divinity Original Sin.
Divinity Original Sin. 1 and 2. Yes, I'm a fan of those games, but I'm late to them, I guess.
I think, to be fair, though, I was kind of late to them, even playing some of them now. I mean, I think partly because I was never really interested in RPGs as much as I was interested in first-person shooters and strategy games. And I think you're more interested in narrative-based games anyway. So I wouldn't call myself someone with any kind of knowledge of those type of games. I mean, I didn't even finish Pillars of Eternity, but then that's not a surprise because I'm pretty terrible at finishing games.
It's long.
Yeah.
It's, if you want to do everything, it's long. It's really long.
How long are we talking here?
Story you can get done in like 30 to 40 hours, but I'd say you're well over 100 hours if you want to do everything. And I haven't even done the White March DLC that came out for it either. And apparently the second one's even longer, so...
Which is something you normally do. Like, you normally... You're the kind of person who does take quite a long time over games. Or, like, you like to complete them.
Yeah.
Fully complete.
Yeah, completionist.
get everything.
Yes, yeah. A little bit OCD, I guess. But, yeah, I like to get the 100% completion or play a game for a long... I like deep time sinks. I think there is a time and place for games that are 6 hours, 8 hours. Sometimes I really like them in between. The mammoth, you can't play mammoth, you know, RPGs or whatever all the time. But yeah, no, I tend to stick with a game until I've 100%ed it or until I'm happy with it. But you kind of move on sometimes quicker, right? Like, depending on... Yeah. I guess the difference is, I guess I'll torture myself with a game I'm not enjoying until it's finished. Whereas you'll just move on to something that you enjoy.
I do try to play... I mean, actually... The whole reason I actually bought... I remember buying Baldur's Gate 2 in 2000, I think it was. It was like 18 years ago when it came out. And I bought three games at the time. And I bought Baldur's Gate 2, I bought Deus Ex, and I bought Project IGI. Now, two of those games are classics. The other one is not so much.
See if you can guess. Yeah. Leave a comment if you can guess.
Yeah. Project IGI was a first-person shooter made by a team headed by... I can't remember his name, but they actually made a sequel to it as well. But who was a big fan of GoldenEye and sort of milsim, GoldenEye / milsim.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was 18 years ago, and it did have a sequel, but it wasn't particularly big. But Deus Ex, of course, you know.
Yeah, of course.
And Baldur's Gate 2. So, I was. It's funny because the one game out of those three I was probably more excited about was Project IGI, and I did play it and I did complete it. But the reason I bought Baldur's Gate 2 was because I wanted to kind of force myself to understand RPGs and understand why people like them, understand what it was about them that got people interested. And just and getting Baldur's Gate 2 was... Baldur's Gate 2 being a, you know, really big example, it was highly rated. So I thought, well, I'll give that a shot. Now, I didn't play a lot of it in the end, but I did play more of Deus Ex. But then Deus Ex was that hybrid of RPG and FPS, and I think that's probably why I lent more to it.
It's weird, though, because, like I say, PC gaming is something that I'm getting into way more, thanks to your influence.
For better or worse.
Yeah. But I'll always, I think, be primarily a console gamer, and that's interesting in itself because... while you say, yeah, I missed Western RPGs like, you know, Baldur's Gate and things, you never got into JRPGs, right?
No.
JRPGs are one of my favourite genre of games.
You see, that's probably my least favourite genre.
Recently, they've started coming out on PC more. You know, you can get most of the Tales games come out on PC now. Tales of Berseria, Tales of Vesperia, Ni No Kuni 2 dropped on PC. Obviously, the Final Fantasy games were on PC now, but what, 10 years, 15 years ago, you couldn't get a JRPG on a PC hardly ever, right? Really? Like, in comparison to the console market, right?
No, you wouldn't. Not really, no. The only way you'd do that is, you know, emulation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, Final Fantasy came out, the big ones, but yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was all... Yeah, it's really odd. It's kind of an odd market. PC had always been, at least when I was growing up, it was much more Western focused, and there didn't seem to be anything Eastern focused about it until sort of StarCraft came along. But then StarCraft is a very much a Western game, but it just got picked up by, and that wasn't even picked up by the Japanese, that's picked up by the Koreans.
Korea,
right?
Yeah.
Right, and then China and places like that. So yeah, it's interesting because it just seems that more, it's just as time has gone on in the 30 or so years I've been playing games, that we've become much more multi-format and much more less region-specific, in not just in terms of platforms, but also in terms of genre as well. So it's odd seeing, for me, it's odd seeing what started becoming odd for me, seeing platformers on PC, for example.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, like, so one of the big... I wanted to finish Pillars of Eternity, and I'm also playing through Yakuza 5, Yakuza being a very Eastern-influenced game. I'm trying to finish Yakuza 5 and then move on to Shenmue HD. And Shenmue and Shenmue 2 are two of my favorite games of all time. But it's interesting because they're out on PC. And if you'd have told me in, 2000, when Shenmue came out, maybe, that it would come to PC. And, you know, all gen consoles. It was such a Sega Dreamcast exclusive.
Yeah, that's weird.
And now you can just get it on PC and you can get Yakuza on PC. So it's really bizarre how that's changed.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean... Yeah, and actually, subsequently, games you would only normally find on PC are starting to come to console as well, right? Pillars of Eternity came to PlayStation and Xbox, and Divinity as well.
Yeah.
So there's just overlap everywhere.
Yeah, actually, it's really interesting. Cause
I think you can play Baldur's Gate on your phone now? What the fuck?
Well, yeah, I think, Well, the original Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, and number two. I think
it's becoming one of those games like Doom where you can just play it on a... You know, playing on a photocopier or something.
runs on literally everything.
It's on a Steam engine.
That's what I've been playing. Tangent. This is a conversational podcast, which probably warned people, so there'll be lots of tangents, I think. So what have you been playing, Simon?
What have I been playing? I've been playing a lot of Factorio. Which is something I was always almost a bit hesitant to talk about on the podcast because I've already talked about it a lot at work and I've already done like a whole actual talk about it at work.
Presentation.
And then I hope people aren't kind of too sick of me talking about it. But I've still been playing a lot of that, which is a management, almost like a strategy game. It's mostly a management sim, though, where the goal is essentially to automate a factory or like components of a factory, really, in order to build more and more resources, in order to unlock more research, in order to build research unlocks the production of or access to the production of new items, with the eventual goal of building a rocket that you can kind of send a satellite off-world. Basically, too.
Yeah, it's super deep.
It is super deep. It sounds really boring concept. Like, it sounds like a really... It's kind of like... And even the name, you know, Factorio. What do you do? What's the main... Build factories. Wow. Amazing. But it's... I think that's one of its biggest flaws is that it doesn't really sell itself well initially. It also looks kind of... it's almost got, like, quite a muted colour palette or, like, a restricted colour palette. It's quite... contrasty, quite dark. It's kind of reminiscent of those old 90s strategy games. In fact, my brother came round a few weeks ago, and my brother's sort of, he's not really into games. He plays FIFA and stuff like that, but he remembers when we used to play PC games with my friends back in when we were teenagers, and he said, oh, he saw me playing, he said, oh, that reminds me of that game you used to play, you know, when we were kids and we were teenagers, whatever. And I couldn't think of it for a while. And then I realized he was talking about Command & Conquer, like the original Command & Conquer from 95, right? And I realized that actually he's kind of right. Like, it does have that kind of look to it. But yeah, the idea is essentially that you have the game play itself. It has... it's all about automation, right, essentially. So automating an entire system that takes resources, that powers one thing, to power your steam engines, that powers some conveyor belts, to take stuff to an assembly machine that makes new products, and all the while you're being attacked or periodically attacked by the sort of indigenous life forms in the area, which is this sort of like almost secondary objective. But it's very much like the kind of free-form... big long games like Civilization, in a sense, in that you're given each map is procedurally generated. First time you play it, they're usually pretty large. In fact, the maps in Factorio are huge. And so it offers a lot of infinite replayability. Some of the games I've seen on YouTube, people have been going for
30 players
and crazy. Going for sort of, you know, they finally finished the goal in 90 hours or something crazy.
I think it's in early access.
It is in early access
still,
yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those games that when someone explains it to you, you're like, what?
Yeah.
And then somebody says, look it up, and you look up just gameplay videos and you're like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you actually play it, or you get somebody, or you know, watch a video review or something where people are actually talking about it and start to understand what it is. Maybe play a friend's, like, sit down at a friend's PC and try and play it for 10 minutes. I guarantee you'll be there for 10 hours. It's the most addictive game I've played in a long, long time.
I think especially if you really like progression systems, if you really like that sort of carrot on a stick design philosophy of these on a, like a nice curve as well. So being able to unlock you know, new abilities, essentially, right? New ways of playing, right? Essentially, is what you're doing by being able to build more and more different items at this factory.
Yeah.
And I was going to say something, and then I completely forgot that what the hell it was. How it linked into something else as well.
About Never Factorio. Mind.
I'm sure I'll think about it. I'm sure I'll think of it later on.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous.
Who knows?
I was like on a total roll.
Dumpster fire.
My God. First podcast.
Yeah.
It is one of those games that just has to be played. And it's not for everybody, you know. It's not. There are people who are out there who just wouldn't, you know. Especially if you're not the kind of person who's a PC gamer, if you're not the kind of person, certainly if you're not the kind of person who's into management sims, because it's reminiscent of older games like Railroad Tycoon, Sid Meier's Railroad Tycoon, and then Transport Tycoon, which is actually that game is actually referenced a lot in the website for Woob Software, who the guys who develop.
So they're the small team in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, there's only like 18 of them, I think, at the moment. But yeah, they nailed it really well. I think a lot of people liked about it was that it was an early access. What a lot of fans are saying is early access done right, as in everything worked kind of out of the box, which I don't think is necessarily. I don't think you have to have that. There's a problem with having the community understand what is it you're trying to get out of early access and what sort of state the game is in at the moment. Obviously the community likes it when things work and they can just play early access.
Yeah, I mean looking at older videos and stuff of it, I've noticed that the art style has actually improved. It was super basic when it first launched in early access, I think, how it looked and things. Even though it doesn't look, you know, like you say, it looks kind of it's got like a dated art style now, but from what I understand, the sort of changes that are being implemented as per feedback from early access, but it's not about bug fixing or anything.
No, it's not. And I think the art style fits it really well. Along with the music, by the way, as well, it's amazing. The music is made off-site by a separate outsourcer. His name escapes me. We'll put it in show notes at the end.
Yes.
But it's really good, and it just conveys and evokes this sense of sort of like of loneliness, of even though you can play multiplayer, right? but evokes this sort of sense of this kind of dystopia. It's because it's basically you're creating an industrial dystopia.
Yeah, right, it's interesting. Around you. That's what I was going to say. Actually, it's interesting because and I've played it a little. I've played it maybe 10 hours. But not nearly enough. I mean, I don't know what your count is.
I don't even dare to look. No,
literally every time I see you on Factorio. But it's interesting because you're kind of the bad guy in a way, because the reason the indigenous life are attacking you is because you're polluting their planet. The loose premise is that you've crashed on an alien world, right? And and you're creating this factory and you're polluting their planet. So the more you pollute their planet, the more often they'll attack you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of an interesting dynamic.
And they'll evolve due to the pollution as well. So They'll become stronger versions. I think there's about 4 or 5 different base enemy types, but then they become stronger with evolution over time.
It's also got mad replay value, right? Because it's a procedurally generated map and
stuff. So. Yeah. It actually reminds me a lot of RimWorld, which is another really, really good Steam game made by a guy called Tynan Sylvester, who used to work for Irrational on Bioshock.
Ah, yeah.
Bioshock, maybe, I'm not quite sure which one, though. I think maybe Bioshock 1, I'm not sure.
Well,
maybe
Bioshock 2 was made by 2K.
Yeah, it's a different...
Shanghai? It was made in China, it wasn't made by the same company,
It wasn't made by Irrational. Yeah, he might have worked with Bioshock, but anyway, it's irrelevant. But RimWorld is quite similar, but has a different hook to it and a different arc, as in RimWorld is more based on character... procedurally generated or emergent narrative, right? So like, yeah. And procedurally generated characters, but then characters that have all about the relationship between the survivors on a lost planet. And it's, again, it's 2D, it's top down. It's about creating a colony to survive in. It's more about colony building and RimWorld, whereas Factorio's course about building factories.
Yeah.
But actually it's funny you say about the bugs as well, the fact that there are no bugs in Factorio, because I was thinking about this the other day when I was playing Factorio, because if there are any bugs in Factorio, I can imagine it just causing a catastrophic
house of cards. House of cards will just tumble down.
Entire factory is based on the fact that every single piece should work as it should do.
Thing is, I don't really even know how you go about designing something like that. I guess you work from the top backwards.
I think.
Because, like, it's so granular. Like, there's so much going on.
I think a lot of playtesting. I think a lot of, like you say, working your way from the top, from that base design. And just, you start out big on a sort of like the macro level, really. And then work your way in from there. At least that's the way I assume that they work. It reminds me of stuff like Dwarf Fortress as well, and SimCity. StarCraft. It's got an art style that's a bit like StarCraft. This is basically my talk.
To be honest, like I was just saying, the this podcast has already been derailed into PC territory far too much.
Yeah, it has.
I just happened to be playing a PC game this week, but generally you'll find me talking about console gaming.
Yeah. We're not talking about such obscure
Steam chat.
Obscure small games like Factorio.
So just Factorio?
No. I was going to mention another game, but it's such a PC game that I really don't know whether I should. But I've been playing Europa Universalis 4.
Oh, fuck off.
And it's one of those games where...
It's a 4X, right?
Essentially. It's one of those games that is made by Paradox, who did Crusader Kings 2 and Hearts of Iron 4.
And also published Pillars of Eternity, so there's your through line.
Oh, yeah, right, okay, yeah, of course.
Sorry.
Stellaris as well, although I think they are not quite sure how much development they had in Stellaris, I can't remember now.
Do they make X2 in those games? X3?
Ooh, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to commit to that.
Yeah, someone will prove us wrong on the internet.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll leave that for later. But basically, Europa Universalis 4 is one of those games where I didn't think I'd find, because I've played a reasonable amount of 4X games over the years. Civilization probably being the biggest one.
Yeah.
But if you think Civilization is complicated, Jesus Christ!
It's
like this is like you need a PhD in history and economics to just.
It's just like
fucking.
I mean, that's the thing, right? So, a game like that really can only exist on PC, right?
I think so.
I mean, it's sort of like an evolution of the RTS, almost.
Oh yeah, you know what I mean, like. Sure. At least an evolution of games like Civilization.
Yeah, I mean, imagine trying...
Which had been around, I think, really before...
They tried to put Dune Civilization 2. On console once. Civilization Revolution.
There's Revolution, but it's a more casual experience.
Back, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
It's on mobile as well.
Yeah. Fuck's sake. Play it on your phone with Baldur's Gate.
Okay, so that's what we've been playing. I promise I'll talk more about... I promise I'll talk less about PC gaming, more about console gaming next week.
Okay, so some of the stuff I have the other stuff that I have been playing is stuff like a lot of PUBG again. Yeah, PUBG. I know it is on console as well. But weirdly, I've been playing Battlefield and Counter-Strike a lot more recently. I think just because I've been getting into first-person shooters.
Battlefield
1.
1.
Because there's the hype around Battlefield 5. I've been watching a lot of streamers playing PUBG, people like, you know, Shroud and Dr. Disrespect, those people. I just kind of getting really more interested in competitive FPS gaming.
Actually, Battlefield 5 was delayed today, really I should have put in the news, but it happened today. So I haven't had time the new release date is confirmed. Just look it up quite quickly while I fill time. It does look good.
It looks like a Battlefield game, right? It's like in essence, it looks like a Battlefield game. Obviously, it's So initial release date is 19th of October, 2018.
So it'll say
November. So it was going to
November 20th, by the looks of things.
Yeah, yeah.
As reported, as reported by GameSpot, says the 20th of November. So it's only a month or so.
Yeah,
delay.
It's not that bad. I know people who are.
Maybe
know,
it's. I mean, it's a bit of a tangent, but I think. Do you think that it's because they want a bit more time to polish? I don't, because it's only a month. I think it's because they want to get out of the way of October.
They don't want to release in October because there's a load of other stuff coming out in October.
Yeah, in October you've got, competitive. So in October you've got Black Ops 4, I think, which is a direct competitor. Yeah. And you've also got Red Dead.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, to be fair, in November you also have Hitman and Fallout.
Yeah,
I think Fallout 76, but they're not direct, you know.
No competitors.
It might be. I don't know. This is pure conjecture, but I feel like maybe it's more about trying to pick a better release date than polishing the game. But
so Hitman and Fallout come in November.
November, yeah.
And
but 26th of October is Red Dead, and that was only a week. Original release date for Battlefield 5. But, yeah, it was only delayed by a month, so...
Yeah.
I can wait for it.
Yeah, I wonder about that. But, yeah, I'll probably pick it up.
I guess that's a...
I don't think you're not a Battlefield player.
So, I beat Battlefield 1.
Wait, does it mean, do you like the campaign? But
yeah, beat the campaign. I played some online. I'm a... fucking massive Star Wars nerd, so I enjoy some Battlefront online, despite the controversy about Battlefront 2, which actually ended up making the game better for a lot of people because they removed all of the controversial stuff and now all of the updates are free. So all of the DLC and everything's free for it. So and I mean, they're quite similar. I tell you, I fucking loved Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Battlefield Bad Company, I mean, that's a serious favourite for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
Especially on console. Console gamers like that one.
Well, I think in terms of single player, because I didn't play a lot of single player, but it gave you a lot of scope for choice.
Yeah, I mean...
It gave you a lot more agency, basically.
I guess another thing to say is that, like... I'm primarily a single player gamer.
Yeah,
and this is maybe more so multiplayer or both.
Well, if it's Battlefield,
Of course,
because you know, I played Battlefield since Battlefield 1942.
Yeah,
when they were only multiplayer games. Yeah. So for me, that's sort of
So I'm primarily a single player gamer, but the thing about Battlefield Bad Company was I put hundreds of hours into the multiplayer.
Yeah.
So it's got to be good if I play it for 100 hours on multiplayer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Or more. But yeah, there's certain games that catch me like that, multiplayer-wise. But yeah, I understand the pull of Battlefield 5. I'll probably buy it.
Yeah.
I'll buy everything.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of... It's odd when they did put... I understood it because Bad Company was the first one that went to console, and it came to console in the... 360 PS3 era. Yep. And, you know,
it wasn't the first one that came to console, right? It was a Modern Combat.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I think.
That's right. Yeah. But you can tell at that time that not everybody was maybe comfortable with playing online, especially console gamers probably weren't used to the idea of just buying a multiplayer game, which they could only play multiplayer and kind of restricted you a bit. And then I remember when 3 came out, it was after the big Call of Duty Modern Warfare exploded. Wave, and they were obviously going, shit, we need a big single player campaign. But I've never really bothered, because I've always liked Battlefield for the multiplayer since 1942, so I never really...
To be honest, most of the time it is better for the multiplayer. The single player is usually good, better than competent, usually very good, but... I mean,
I think 1 is probably the best example of single player.
Yeah, that's a very good.
Well, actually,
I like the vignette style single player campaign.
I don't know. Did you prefer Bad Company 2?
Yeah, I did.
Single player, because
I did, but it's more pulpy, right?
Yeah.
Than Battlefield 1.
Oh yeah.
Especially given the subject matter, but it's interesting because single player is what draws me to a game, but multiplayer is something that catches me sometimes, and I lose many hundreds of hours, and Battlefield's definitely been one that I've done that to, or I've played, but not so much Battlefield 1 maybe. But we'll see when Battlefield 5 comes out. Speaking of which, again, slightly a tangent, what are you feeling on Fallout 76?
I'm probably gonna get it,
because I love Fallout as a franchise. I was a little disappointed with Fallout 4. I felt like it felt a bit old. Like it felt a little bit like... I say old.
Maybe it's just feeling like that classic Bethesda sort of more of the same.
Yeah, it felt like an evolution of Fallout 3 and New Vegas and Skyrim, which is fine, which is all we expected. But between Skyrim and Fallout 4, The Witcher 3 came out.
And
you know, sort of redefined everyone's expectations.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel a bit like Fallout 4 was a little... I don't know, it didn't grab me anyway, like Fallout 3 did. But loads of people love that game.
No, I think... I know what I'm getting when I get a Bethesda game.
Yeah.
And that's... I don't know. It's not... When I think about it, when I think about what that involves, I'm less excited about it than when I actually play it, I think. I think I actually enjoy it. It sounds a weird thing to say.
I see what you mean.
But 76 is different, though, because 76 is... Well, I mean, it's different in the fact that it's multiplayer.
And it's made by a different team. I mean, they're supported by Bethesda Game Studios, but the primary team for it is the team in... Texas, the team that they bought.
Oh.
That Bethesda bought. They were making...
really? Oh.
Yeah, they were making something else. I forget what it's called, but they were making an online game. Huh. And Bethesda, or ZeniMax, I should say, bought them.
Right, okay.
And I assume repurposed them onto 76. Huh. But you know, they were supported by Bethesda Game Studios, which is the main one as well. But they're also working on... obviously, Elder Scrolls 6 wants a star. What's that one called that they just announced?
What, the new
Starfield? Is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. So I think so.
Yeah. The one that they announced.
The one they announced E3, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've only seen the footage from E3, the NoClip documentary
about
Fallout 76, and also the related one about Bethesda, history of Bethesda's studios. And I think that's it, maybe. But I think I've basically just seen all the content that was released a few months ago, and I don't think anything new has been...
No, maybe a little. I've kind of kept away from it a little bit because I'd like to go in a little bit blind, but it would be very interesting to see if they're able to, you know, alter that formula so it works in a multiplayer space. I know there's some interesting... things about it, like there's no raiders in the game.
Oh yeah.
Every raider or human you come across will be another player.
Yeah.
That's a big thing they've said.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So most of the things you'll be fighting are creatures or other players, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what... Yeah, I imagine that's just to help you distinguish between...
I think there's a variety of... I think they go into it quite a lot. But there's some interesting stuff like the nuke stuff and how it evolves areas into higher level areas and things like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, but...
Yeah, that is interesting.
We shall see.
Yeah, I hope they do... Well, I hope it does well, essentially. I will get it because I think the idea of a Bethesda-authored multiplayer experience is something that we haven't seen before. Like, not in those...
Other than The Elder Scrolls Online, but that's Xenomite. Xenomite, yes. But yeah.
There is that.
The MMO of their other massive franchise.
Yeah. But, like... Yeah, Elder Scrolls Online is a classic, what has now become the classic MMO style, which is not what Fallout 76 is.
It's much
more of a first-person shooter. I wondered whether they were trying to take... I don't think they were. I was going to say taking hints from the big Battle Royale sort of... But that game must have been in development
long before...
PUBG,
yeah, I don't think they're...
PUBG even...
No, I don't think so.
Early access, never mind.
I don't think so at all. Yeah. I think, no.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't really have the mechanics of...
No, and again, it sounds to me like both of us aren't super up on all of its features, because we've sort of wanted to go in blind a little bit, so I'm hesitant to say how similar it would be to a regular Fallout game or to a Battle Royale game or anything, because I don't know exactly how it's going to play, but it certainly piqued my interest.
Yeah.
So, good.
What else have you been playing? Are you on Earth talking about anything else you've been playing? Have you been playing anything else?
Yakuza 5. So I guess what we could do is talk about what we're going to be playing. So obviously you're going to be getting Fallout 76.
Yep.
I'll be getting... So this month, next month, in fact every month, but this month and next month is awful for me. For new releases, because I say awful because there's so many. So I'm going to be getting Dragon Quest XI on the 4th. I believe it's out on the 4th. And then on the 7th is Spider-Man, which I've been waiting for a while.
Yeah.
Insomniac's Spider-Man.
Yep.
Which looks fucking amazing.
I've never actually spent any decent amount of time in any Spider-Man game.
Oh man, get yourself Spider-Man 2 on PS2. I bet it's still good.
I think I have an idea of which one you're talking about, because it was
the first
big,
like,
dynamic
open world
swinging web systems around cities and stuff.
And even the PS1 Spider-Man games were good, the ones made by Activision.
Right. Yeah.
I can't remember what they were called, but yeah, even they were good. But yeah, I think it's time for a new Spider-Man game. It looks amazing. I can't wait. And then on the 14th, I was reminded today, Tomb Raider, a Shadow of the Tomb Raider is out. And I was like, oh yeah.
Of September?
Yeah. Okay. I was like, oh yeah, I'd completely forgot that was even coming out. Because I don't know if you played the 2013 Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I've got it.
Or the Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah, Rise. Yeah, I've got it. But not a lot. Because, I don't know.
So, I 100% in both of them. Thank God they took the online mode out for the second one. I might still be there. Awful. I thoroughly enjoyed them both. They're not really... it's weird. I still don't think there's enough tomb raiding going on. You know, it sounds weird. Like, there's tombs and... But the puzzles are kind of small, and they kind of iterated and made it a bit more so in the second one. But I'm hoping that they really go all out on, like, big puzzles, like in the original, because I loved the PS1
games,
and the puzzles were just... Yeah. There's some puzzles in that take you hours.
We love the original.
Cistern. Do you remember the cistern in Tomb Raider 1? Oh, my God. It's you there for days. It's just so complicated and obtuse.
God. I can't remember.
I'm not talking anything that sort of size, but it'd be nice if there was more emphasis on puzzles.
What did you like about it Most.
As in the originals?
No, the latest one.
Yeah, I like it more as like a open world action set PC kind of, almost an Uncharted type of a deal, I guess.
Yeah.
It's interesting because Uncharted was informed by Tomb Raider and now Tomb Raider's being informed by Uncharted, yeah, yeah. Which is kind of interesting. Yeah, but and I love the Uncharted games as well. I unfortunately the story has not been gripped me really in the first and second one.
Okay.
Rise of the Tomb Raiders was slightly more interesting, I thought, but there's a really bizarre the first one takes a really bizarre turn. I won't ruin it for you in case you
no.
Or I won't ruin it for anyone
anybody else listening.
Who's listening. But yeah, like you'll know it when it comes. You get to a certain point in the first one in 2013's Tomb Raider, 2013, and it's just like what and then it just ends and you're like, what the fuck was that? And then they seemingly just shade over it for the second one. It's not really there, but it's kind of a bit of a weird one. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I'll buy that on the 14th, and then in October is Red Dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Red Dead.
And then November, Hitman 2.
Hitman 2. Looking forward to that.
Yes, you're a big Hitman player. Oh, did you hear that you can play all of your... Apparently, might need corroborating, but you can play all of your Hitman 1 contracts in Hitman 2.
What do you mean?
Heard this. I don't know if this is... So, you know all of the episodes from Hitman 1?
Yeah.
They'll be available in your... If you own the game.
So you mean the same game, essentially?
So, if you own the game, right, you can... So when you load up Hitman 2, presumably...
Yeah. They just...
All of the... I think... I don't want to... We should probably look this up to make sure, but I'm sure I heard...
Okay.
That you can play the... Hitman 1, as in, was it 2016?
The 2016 one, yeah, yeah.
Missions?
Yeah.
As well?
What?
But I'm assuming you have to own
them. But surely that's like...
Both.
Okay. Because surely, you mean they're sort of just giving you the first one within the second one?
I don't think they give you it. I think that you have to already own it, but I think it's just one place to play all of your Hitman contracts.
Okay, so it's because... I mean? Well, I suppose that might make sense within the framework of the Hitman 2016, because it was episodic.
Yeah, so I think you already have to own the first one.
And so close to releases, right? It could almost be like a... Hitman 2 could have almost been just a continuation, episodic continuation of them. But it's not.
I could be wrong about that anyway, but I'm sure I heard that somewhere.
Different publisher and that kind of thing. Huh. Okay. Oh, well.
I might be completely wrong about that, and I apologise if I am, but I'm sure I heard it somewhere.
We can put it in the notes at the end, whether you're wrong or
when I'm proven wrong.
Giles was wrong.
Yes, when I'm proven completely wrong, then we'll put it in the notes and I'll skulk away. What are you looking forward to, other than Fallout? Anything else before we move on to the news?
Lots of stuff, really. Stuff that I can't even... Well, Hitman 2. Red Dead.
What if Red Dead doesn't get a PC release? You'll have to play it on console.
Oh, that's okay. No, I've got a PS4 now, you see.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's
everything's
my
okay. Everything's peachy. It's all right. I don't know. Like, I... As usual, got a huge backlog of stuff to get through anyway.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a joke. It's a
library that keeps growing.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Like a virus.
It's utterly ridiculous.
Like, Humble Bundle was a lot to answer for.
Yeah, it's weird because like I just buy everything new that comes out, even if I'm not going to... Like I'm a huge Monster Hunter fan. I bought Monster Hunter Ultimate, Generations Ultimate on the Switch. On Friday, and when the hell am I going to get to play that? Like, never going to happen. Like, I'm just buying them all. Whereas, at least with the Humble Bundle, you know, you pay a monthly amount, right? And they're just giving you games.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And kind of, yeah. there's a lot of indie games as well that give you in Humble Bundle, which is really cool to discover new content. But I just find myself not even having the time half the time to even try them. It's quite sad.
Well, someday.
Someday, I will. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know. I must be looking forward to a lot of other stuff this year. I mean, there's stuff that's coming out next year. There's Doom Eternal coming out next year.
Oh, yes.
And I love Doom 2016. I'm a massive Doom fan, as you know.
Yes.
And Doom Eternal is coming out next year. And it does seem like they're obviously going down the route of what Doom 2 did originally, which was Doom 2 was called Doom 2 Hell on Earth.
Yeah.
And when instead of being based on Mars, it's demons come to Earth. And
spoilers.
Like, yeah. Surprise.
Spoilers for Doom 2.
And there was a big, I don't know whether you saw the press conference thing they did at... was it Gamescom?
I think it was QuakeCon.
It was QuakeCon. Yeah, you're right. It was QuakeCon. Where they showed off all the new footage and that.
Yes, I did
weird
see
weird hook-type weapon, which looked really
yeah,
fun.
And, yeah, I mean, so I fucking loved Doom 2016. Oh, man, that game. And I mean, it's... I played it on PS4, platinumed it on PS4, and then I played it on PC, and then I played it on Switch.
Did you complete it on Switch?
Yep.
What?
And I now own it. I think I have it on Xbox One, even though I never play the Xbox One. I'm a PlayStation gamer primarily. So I think I have it on Xbox One as well.
Why have I got it on Xbox One?
I don't know. I just loved it that much. So yeah, I'm super looking forward to Doom Eternal.
Yeah.
Although there's that weird invasion mechanic. Have you seen this?
Where games yeah, that's basically
like Dark Souls.
Not quite. I don't think because...
I don't really know the nuts and bolts of how it works.
It almost looks like a sort of Left 4 Dead multiplayer mode, right? Where you... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on this one as well, but where players can join in to your session and play as a demon.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully you can turn that off because I don't want...
Yeah, I imagine so.
I don't want anyone bothering me.
Yeah, I mean, that would be... Just, you know, like...
Yeah. But yeah, Doom Eternal looks great. I mean, I don't even want to get into next year. Like, the releases are just... It's too much. It's too much. In fact, we'll get to more releases that we'll purchase in the news. Spoiler for later on in the news article.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
We should probably get to the news, to be honest.
Yeah.
Are you... Anything else? Anything else on stuff looking forward
well,
to?
I mean,
anything
just,
else on Doom?
I'm actually, you know, I am looking forward to the stuff you mentioned before, like Red Dead looks amazing. I'm looking forward to whatever Bethesda do with Elder Scrolls next. But that, again, that's, you know...
You'd be looking forward to it for a long, old
yeah,
time.
Yeah. No, I get it. I mean, they show that teaser trailer, teaser.
I don't even know if I call that trailer.
Long. No,
that
so, yeah.
So baffling to me, like, why... Because Bethesda have been really good at... 2 years ago at E3, they had a really strong E3. And the last two E3s, I felt like they almost didn't have enough to fill a press conference.
Yeah.
I mean, they did, but like, I don't, what, they're showing games for consoles that haven't even been announced yet. Because they said Starfield's a next-gen game, so is Elder Scrolls. So, but we haven't even had next-gen console announcements.
Know. You know, they work on these things for a long time.
And what are they going to show next year? I don't know. Working on Starfield?
But Skyrim was however many years in development, quite a long time.
Do you know that Skyrim...
straight off the bat, off Oblivion, right?
You know that Skyrim... you can play on Alexa. They did for E3. That, you see that trailer?
What?
That guy's playing Skyrim on his Alexa. His, you know, his Amazon Echo. Or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, so he's... In the trailer, they showed at E3. There's a guy who sits down to play Skyrim, and he goes to grab a Switch controller. He goes
Yes. No, I did see that.
Like,
I did see that.
Turns out that Skyrim is actually available on Alexa, and you can play it with your voice.
What? That's insane.
Yeah, so apparently it actually really
is. I almost thought that was a gimmick. That surely was
It was a troll, basically. I think Pete Hines maybe said that it was a joke, but then they thought what would be a better joke than actually making it so everyone gets double.
And that wasn't the Elder Scrolls Blades thing that was
No.
It wasn't I can't remember.
No, Blades is a mobile game.
Yeah.
Which looks good.
Weird.
Blades looks good. Even though I don't like mobile gaming particularly.
Yeah. I don't think what else. We've talked about Battlefield 5.
I mean,
yeah, there's not like, it's basically
they are Mega Man 11. Oh my god! Sorry, had a moment there about Mega Man 11. I think that's in October as well. Oh yeah, and Just Cause 4 is in December, I think.
Okay.
Oh, and Smash Bros.
Okay.
But yeah, yeah, Mega Man 11, that's a big one for me. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh, fuck. That's October as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be getting that.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
No wonder Battlefield 5 got delayed. If we're going to go with that.
Yeah.
That theory. Well, anyway.
News.
Move on.
News.
What's in the news?
So, again, these are mainly news stories that interested us. we're not really covering everything. I wouldn't... but they are interesting. Yeah. So, firstly, Onimusha Warlords Remastered has been announced by Capcom. You remember Onimusha? According to Capcom blog, as reported by IGN, the 2001 PlayStation 2 Classic will release on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC, and Switch on January 15th, 2019. It's going to cost $20. I don't know what it's going to cost for in English pounds sterling, but it's apparently going to cost $20.
Whatever.
Now, I want to talk a little bit about Onimusha, because I love Onimusha, and it's a franchise that has just been gone forever.
You can explain to me a lot about Onimusha, because I am willfully...
Have you ever heard of Onimusha?
Woefully or willfully? Woefully ignorant. Woefully ignorant. Willfully ignorant. I mean, they're just deliberately...
You just deliberately have been avoiding Onimusha since 2001.
It's like, fuck Onimusha.
Yeah, since 2001, you've just been avoiding it. Yeah. Well, no longer. So, have you ever heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I don't really know a lot about it.
Brief history of Onimusha. It was a game made by Capcom. It's a franchise. The first one came out in 2001, and it was a sort of like Resident Evil, but in feudal Japan against demons instead of against zombies. Mm. So it was like 2D backgrounds and tank controls, but you were a fucking samurai who would kill demons and absorb souls.
Okay.
And it was really like deliberate combat, blocking. It was really like... Yeah. Fucking awesome. Really atmospheric. Because of the 2D backgrounds, they were able to do that awesome... You know, like the old Resident Evil, the Resident Evil remake.
Yeah.
The Resident Evil 1 remake on the GameCube, which they brought to PlayStation and Xbox and PC recently. That's one of my favourite games, that HD remake of Resident Evil. But that sort of beautiful backdrop. Because it's all 2D.
Yeah, because it's all
So they did the first one. And the main character is actually played by a real... Japanese actor whose name eludes me now, but it was kind of a big thing as well because they got a real actor to play his role. And then there was Onimusha 2, which was sort of more of the same 2D backdrops and everything, but they got they used a famous Japanese actor who's actually been dead for about 20 years to be the main character. It's a character called Jubei. So in the first one you play as a guy called Samonosuke, the second one you play as Jubei, and then in the third one's really weird. Right, so in Onimusha 3, you play as Samonosuke again from the first one. Now it's 3D rendered, so it's no longer 2D backdrops. So it's a 3D rendered game, and you play as him and a character who's... I can't remember his name, but he's played by Jean Reno.
Okay.
It's actually...
voice acted.
And his likeness.
Okay.
And so
I think I remember this.
Premise
right,
is that Jean Reno is in modern-day France, and Samonosuke is in... ancient Japan, feudal Japan, and the demons attack both, and the two of them swap places.
When was this made?
About 2006. So maybe? It was like 2005.
Jean Reno was doing a lot of Hollywood stuff.
Yeah, he was a big actor.
Because
obviously
he's still a big actor.
Maybe a little earlier than that, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, he was in. It was sort of that era of Jean Reno, sort of post Leon.
Yeah, yeah.
Post.
Yeah,
Godzilla. Sorry to mention Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. But yeah, so yeah, and it was weird because you played as both, you switched between, but Jean Reno travelled to ancient Japan. A sentence I never thought I'd say. And Samonosuke travelled to like modern day France.
Travelled to ancient Japan.
Like time travel to ancient Japan. But he had like a whip. So you're playing as like Jean Reno in a trench coat with a whip, whipping demons. It was really fucking
Japan.
Weird. In ancient Japan. So yeah, there was that, which a lot of people sort of were a bit you know, lukewarm on. Mm-hmm. And then they did one called Onimusha Dawn of Dreams, which was the last Onimusha game. There was a couple of spin-offs as well as Onimusha Tactics and a fighting game as well. But Onimusha Dawn of Dreams was the fourth game. And it was sort of a soft reboot. It was full 3D, had like a fighting engine, different character with a couple of overlaps. And it was good. They were all great. The third one probably the weakest, but they were all great. And then Dawn of Dreams didn't set the world on fire and they just stopped. And like this big fan base has been like, where the fuck is Onimusha? Like, you know, they're resurrecting a lot of this Devil May Cry. Yeah, it's coming back. Capcom doing that. You know, there's been a lot of like Shadow of the Colossus, Doom, like all these revitalized franchises. And everyone's been like, where's Onimusha? Like, what the fuck? They've redid Resident Evil to death. So
Streets of Rage 4.
Streets of Rage 4, yep. Crazy announcement. So, I mean, yeah, this is mainly me just talking about how excited I am about Onimusha Warlords Remastered. But I think it's super exciting. I think it's awesome that... I hope it does well. I hope people buy it because I want more Onimusha. I want a new Onimusha game. Uh-huh. And they could make a really fucking awesome one now.
Yeah.
Almost in the Dark Souls mold or something like that.
Yeah.
But in order... I'm guessing this is testing the waters because it's a remaster of the first game. And it's coming out on everything.
Wow.
So it's coming out on Switch.
PC?
PC, yep. Coming out on PC, Switch, Xbox One, PS4 on January 15th, 2019. So, I mean, I'm super excited about it. You should buy it. Yeah. Not you, this, you, Simon, should buy it, but also everyone who loves Onimusha should
you
buy it.
You out there.
It's only $50. It's only
$20. Like a very sort of 1950s advert, you know. You should buy it.
All of you out there in YouTube lands or wherever we're posting this. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, so $20. I don't know what it'll be in US in UK pounds, but...
Yeah, it's like 16, 17 quid or something.
Look up Onimusha.
Yes, I will.
Do that.
I will. Huh. What else has happened recently?
Actually, the second item on our list... So we have 7 items on the list, on our news list. 7 breaking bulletins. So the second was actually something that you told me about.
Oh, yep.
So I'm doing a terrible job at collating the news. And that's that a new Sega Mega Drive, or Genesis for our fellows over the pond, for our friends across
American
the pond.
American cousins.
Has been released. A new Sega Mega Drive game has been released.
Which is nuts, because... It's not like... I think maybe when people just sort of read that news story, they go, oh, right, you just made a game that looks like a Sega Mega Drive game.
Yeah.
Or that... Or it's released also on other platforms, like you can get it on Switch, whatever. But it's not. It's only released on Mega Drive.
So, Tanglewood, it's called. Tanglewood, by developer Big Evil Big Evil Corp.
Corporation,
I think. Yeah. It was successfully kickstarted. I'm not sure when. I couldn't find a date for the Kickstarter, but I assume it was a year or two ago. But it began to roll out its copies to backers and customers. You've got to wait for Batch 2, which is in October, if you want a physical copy. But the game is available on Steam for those wanting a cheaper and perhaps more practical way of experiencing it.
Did he port that then?
So the physical copy the physical copy is $54.99 in pounds. I don't know what it is in dollars. But I think Big Evil Corp is in England. I think he's in Sheffield, I think.
Well, the BBC didn't.
I'm sure he ships internationally. But yeah, $54.99 for the actual Mega Drive game, which comes in an actual Mega Drive or Genesis box with instructions. It's fucking
insane.
Awesome. Or the Steam version weighs in at $13.99.
That's not too bad.
In pounds.
I didn't realize it was also available on Steam, because I was just about to say that it's only available on Mega Drive, but clearly it's not. It's just mad. Like the idea that he... It's one of those things where, especially when I speak to, I've been talking about this before, speaking to program friends of mine, and they'll say, "Oh, I'm making an indie game." And you're like, "Oh, really? What are you making it in? You make it in Unity, Unreal?" And like, "Oh, no, I'm writing my own game engine." You're like, why are you doing this? This guy clearly just wants to take one step further. He just went, you know what? I'm not only gonna. I mean, he didn't actually have to write his own engine, right? As far as I know.
I haven't looked into it.
He had to learn 68K assembly language, which is pretty fucking.
So he was
pretty low level.
Just be like, you know what I miss? The Mega Drive.
Yeah. But I think from the stuff I read, he always wanted to make a Mega Drive since he got a Mega Drive game, right? And that just, it's not just I want to make games, but I want to make a Mega Drive game.
Amazing. Right? Props.
And it's obviously very difficult to not only for him to relearn a lot of like software skills, a lot of, like I said, 68K assembly.
Yeah.
And also to get more probably, well, in terms of hardware, definitely, I mean, acquiring like essentially the dev kit for Mega Drive.
God knows where he got that from. Like I have no idea where he got that from.
Mega CD dev kit. That he had to order from a special place and had to get separate parts sent in. And then obviously he's got to write it using, I think, because he had to have a PC that was running DOS, because obviously in the early 90s, and obviously nobody was running Windows. And so running MS-DOS as his operating system to compile like his 68K assembly.
It's obviously a labor of love. It's obviously a labor of love. Like, he obviously, it's a dream that he wanted to fulfill, and like, massive props. For me, it feels a bit like, why are you making it so hard for yourself?
You could make a.
There's a lot of games that have come out that are in the mold of NES Mega Drive.
But that
Master System, but have been made with modern engines and modern tech, so Shovel Knight. Obviously he cares about the authenticity, and that's commendable. Like, more commendable than, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I would have the strength to do that.
But to
learn from the ground up, I don't know.
This is why it's news, and that's why it's famous, because it is a Mega Drive game. Whereas, you know, I mean, he could have made Tanglewood in Game Maker Studio or Unity or Unreal, and it wouldn't have been half the remarkable. I haven't played it. I'm sure it's a great game, but it's the pure fact that it was a Mega Drive game.
I'd be interested to know what Sega's stance has been on it, as in like whether he has licensed to actually publish it, because I know he's selling it, like you can buy it on the website, and my assumption would be that there has to be some sort of green light for that to happen, but I don't know
they still do kind of certification on
yeah, getting it through cert, I don't know,
yeah. But make sure it complies with all the Mega Drive
what are even the functionality. I don't even know, but yeah, that is amazing.
It's pretty cool.
I don't know the gentleman's name, but
so apparently, but the game is about a
commend you, sir.
A fox, yes, who's lost its way
in the woods,
lost its family, and has to use clues in the environment to eventually find its way home.
As was probably expected, the coverage has all been on the journey rather than the destination. i.e. the fact that it's a Mega Drive game and that it's made up, but rather than it being about how good the game actually is, because I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
I might put it on my Steam wish list out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Just pick it up at some point.
I mean, it's kind of what Mega Drive's games were big 25 years ago now. 93. Probably at their peak, maybe.
I don't know. Is it 92 Mega Drive came out? 92,
maybe
91, 92.
Not sure.
I think it was 91 actually.
Yeah, it might
first,
be.
First
yeah,
Sonic was 91.
It may
right,
well so. Have been earlier because.
Yeah, 91. So.
Yeah.
Christ.
Yeah.
Old. We are old. Old has occurred.
Just nuts. But yeah, props to him. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well done, sir.
What's happened?
So
recently,
IM3. I'm just wondering whether I should do these a little bit out of order. Yeah, I will. So, speaking on the sticking with the retro theme for a second, Shovel Knight. Did you play Shovel Knight? Shovel Knight's final two DLCs have been confirmed. Originally, one of them was Shovel Knight Showdown, which is a multiplayer brawler where you play as the different characters from Shovel Knight as an expansion for Shovel Knight.
Okay.
Which was originally mentioned as a stretch goal in 2013 on the game's Kickstarter.
Uh-huh.
Multiplayer brawler. You can choose your favorite Shovel Knight character and
beat the shit out of each other.
And then also the final single player DLC, Shovel Knight King of Cards. Were both confirmed. They're both coming out on April 9th, 2019, along with a new amiibo pack for those of us who are obsessed with amiibos or have a Switch or just want the little figures. So, yeah, I mean, I love Shovel Knight. I don't know if you've played Shovel Knight.
Yeah, I think I played a little bit, but not not a lot.
But I think it's a wonderful game, and it's a great value for money with Treasure Trove. So I just, well, yeah, I just...
When is it?
Did I not say? April 9th, 2019.
You probably did, but I didn't.
So they've announced this quite early, April 9th, 2019. It's quite a way off. But yeah, Shovel Knight available on... Oh, and actually, so it's available... Shovel Knight's available on, like, everything, but interestingly, Showdown, I don't know about King of Cards, but the Showdown DLC definitely has been confirmed not to be available for the 3DS and Vita versions.
Okay.
Of Shovel Knight, even though the other DLCs are available on those formats. So, I thought it might be interesting to speak a little about whether we think that the Vita and the 3DS are kind of dying now. What the shelf life you think is in those?
Well,
because they've got games like Shovel Knight.
Given that
the Vita
we have
really...
the Switch.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, well, and it would seem to me that the only reason you would get a DS over a Switch, well, two reasons. One, its size, it's not that much different.
No,
really,
no, not for Excel.
And two, the price.
Mm.
But you know, I mean, the thing is, I wonder, because both owned by Nintendo, right? So,
but I mean,
Nintendo's
the Vita,
not losing out.
So, I love the Vita. I love the PS Vita. I love it. I mean,
yeah, the Vita,
fucking fantastic handheld that just unfortunately was not supported enough or whatever. It just didn't really catch on. Didn't really catch fire like the PSP did.
The Vita would just have to offer games that the Switch doesn't.
Really. I mean, yeah, it's not. It's too far gone now. The train has left the station with the Vita,
but it's been out forever anyway.
Yeah, right? I think it's a hugely underrated.
Really,
portable. Yeah, the Vita is great, but I think I'm just sad to see it go. But the fucking DS feels like it's been around my whole life.
Yeah, well,
in some form or another.
Yeah,
I don't know when the original DS came out.
I don't know either.
It's not PC related.
That's what you don't know.
I did get a DS. I remember getting a Game Boy Advance when that came out.
The original,
I got it on
Advance
release,
or the SP,
the original Advance.
The original Advance.
With
no backlight.
And that was 17 years ago, maybe 2001, maybe 17, 18 years ago.
Sounds about
so
right.
The DS was the next one to come out.
Yeah, the DS.
Right. Oh no, because yes, I do. Because the DS was
the SP,
like,
came out first, right? So.
So the DS came out with stuff like Nintendogs, right?
And Mario 64 DS.
Yeah, which was massive. And I'm pretty sure that was around about, because I was at university then, must have been around about 2003, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, sounds about right.
I
haven't got exact. But yeah, I mean, the 3DS obviously was iteration, and there's been the new 3DS XL and all that sort of stuff. But it's just interesting, the Switch is obviously dominating the portable market quite, like, heartily at the moment. I mean, I'm happy to see how well the Switch is doing after the disaster that was the Wii U's.
Yeah.
Sort of, I think it sold 13 million units or something in total.
They seem to sort of go in every other console almost, at least since N64, and then GameCube didn't do...
Well,
GameCube was good, but it didn't do quite as well.
Well, no, it's actually interesting.
And then Wii did amazing.
So if you look at the sales results, they're actually on a decline. All the way through. So I think the SNES is the peak, the Super NES is the peak. Yeah. And then the 64 sold less than that. And then the GameCube sold less than that. And then the Wii was massive and sold loads. But then the Wii U sold less than the GameCube. So there's this like constant decline with the Wii being a massive spike because it just did so well. Everybody bought a Wii, but actually now the Switch is done pretty well. I think it's in the 20 million, getting close to 20 million units.
They have they have more competition now from, they got Sony and Microsoft to deal with rather than...
Even though they're kind of not really, they're kind of just doing their own thing, right?
Well, they always
doing
have.
Whatever they want for you.
They always have, really, haven't they?
Yeah, they don't really try and compete directly, I don't think, but...
No.
But I think it's an interesting question to ask whether we'll ever see another portable console from Nintendo, from Sony or Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft have never from Sony.
Unless they want to try and do basically what the Switch did.
Yeah, I don't think they'll do it. Not now. Not at the moment.
Yeah. Do you think that these days, the 2DS is better / sort of more value for money than the 3DS?
Yes, I do. I think that there's not too much difference. I don't know anyone. I think I know one person. I think I've known one person in my life who's played consistently with the 3D turned on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's never really been a thing. I mean, the technology is incredible to make it 3D without glasses and stuff, but... Yep. And there was a brief period where Nintendo were kind of designing games around the idea of it being 3D.
Yeah.
So, like, if you play Super Mario 3D Land, which is on the 3DS, and it's fucking awesome. It's a great Mario game. But it's notably easier with the 3D on.
Okay.
Because there's platforming sections where you need to understand the depth. And it's harder if the 3D is not on.
Okay.
Same with Luigi's Mansion 2.
Yeah.
There's whole sections where there's like boss fights and things where it's designed to be played with the 3D on. But they've kind of abandoned that now, and most of their like AAA releases, like the new Pokemon games, you know, Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, I don't think they even have 3D functionality. If you turn the 3D slider up, nothing happens. So I think they've kind of abandoned it now. And the 2DS is cheaper, and the new form factor for the 2DS is nice, the clamshell design and things like that. So
XL is...
Yeah, so the original 2DS was just the flat one that didn't fold, but the 2DS XL is the
one that's got
the clamshell design.
I totally missed that whole, like, flat doesn't folding bit, and I saw one the other day, and I thought, wait, that's a 2DS?
Yeah,
it doesn't even
really
fold.
Weird. It's a really weird design. Yeah, I mean, it's really quite odd. Comfortable to play, but it is a really weird design.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I like the library of games on 3DS. There's a lot of RPGs. There's a lot of JRPGs. A lot of good JRPGs on the 3DS.
I just... cartridges as well, I just...
Well, the Switch is cartridges.
It is, yeah. But you can get stuff downloaded, right? So
yeah. Yeah, in fact, I prefer that. I prefer buying games digitally on the Switch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
changing the cartridge is a pain in the ass.
Like losing cartridges, and then they're more expensive to produce, and therefore more expensive to buy... generally, but I don't know whether Nintendo really...
Well, Nintendo have a strange... they call it the Nintendo... they don't, but people I've known call it the Nintendo tax, where for some reason things are just more expensive on Nintendo's platforms for no reason at all. Even down to, like, the granular stuff, the smaller stuff, like a new game, a new indie game will come out and it'll be £10 on PlayStation, it'll be £15 on Switch, and you're like, why am I paying it £5 more for something that runs it worse? I don't know. But, I just wanted a brief... there's a tangent from Shovel Knight. I wanted to talk about Shovel Knight, but also I wanted to see what your views were on handheld gaming. I don't think we've ever spoken about it.
Yeah.
But it seems that you're not...
No, I... Well, the thing is, I don't...
Bothered.
Commute.
That's
true. I don't have a commute, so otherwise, if I did, I'd get a Switch, because Switch is amazing. Like, and I just love what they're doing with it, because they're putting... so much stuff on there that isn't classically Nintendo, or they're branching out so much more with multi-format games that don't really feel like they were ever part of Nintendo.
Yeah, they're getting great third-party support.
Yeah, I mean, you said Pillars of Eternity.
Pillars
there?
Of Eternity 2. Just on, Deadfire 2, sorry, coming to Switch. Obviously, Dark Souls.
Yeah, which is crazy.
You've got, like, Outlast 2 and Outlast are on Switch.
Yeah.
Who's playing Outlast on
just
the Switch?
Like, Skyrim's on
Skyrim,
Switch.
Doom.
Like, yeah.
Doom Eternal's coming to Switch.
Yeah.
Just, Wolfenstein.
Yeah, Wolfenstein's bonkers.
Yeah, crazy.
And some really good stuff that's sort of... that just really fits that format, like Stardew Valley, and now into the Breach.
Stardew Valley. That's my most played game on Switch. I've played Stardew Valley on Switch more than Breath of the Wild, and I put a lot of time into Breath of the Wild, and beat the DLC. But yeah, I've played Stardew Valley more.
Stardew Valley, yeah, ridiculous.
Just insane. It's just insane. Never cared so much about like chickens, like, upgrading my chicken coop,
just making nice little farm.
Absolutely insane. Yeah, I love it so much. Yeah, it is. I have no idea why. So I don't even know what number item we're on, but
the next item of news,
a new gameplay video was released for Cyberpunk 2077. Yes. It's almost 50 minutes long. Ish was like 48 minutes, I think.
It's pretty long.
And I know, I mean, I'm super interested, but you're super interested in Cyberpunk as well, right?
I mean, I actually didn't know. Well, I mean, I saw the reveal thing,
the gameplay
at E3.
Reveal. The E3 video.
Yeah, it was basically cinematic, right? So, yeah. And I didn't know what it was, what to expect. And it's kind of an interesting one because it's made by CD Projekt Red, who seemingly have only made, so far, The Witcher games and The Witcher card game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if you watch the amazing NoClip documentary, there's quite a good history on like where they came from and stuff. But
yeah, because they used to sell...
Yeah, and they did support stuff and things like that, I think. But yeah, they're mainly known for The Witcher series.
Yeah, so it's interesting seeing them doing a first person, even though it's RPG based, right? But like first person.
Yeah, I mean, so I would say that it's interesting because it looks way more Deus Ex than I was expecting.
Yeah, it does.
So
it does.
We should point out that the video that they released, CD Projekt were really keen to point out that it was still a work in progress and it wasn't in any way final.
Yeah.
But it was way more Deus Ex than I thought it would be. But like, I think it's the stuff, because there's been an interesting reaction. First of all, I don't get the moaning about it not being third person.
Yeah, I didn't get that at all.
I think people just want it to be The Witcher in space, in the future. Like, it's obviously not. Like, so I don't really get that criticism anyway. But what impressed me was, at first, I thought, oh, it looks a bit more generic than I thought it would. And then the closer I look, the granular detail is where it really impresses me. So I think that's where it's going to be impressive. I think it's like everything that's going on and all the other NPCs and the city and...
That's exactly what I thought about the opening city shot when they come out of her sort of apartment building and they're entering into that city area and the narrator's going, oh, this is quite bold statement, because he says, you know, this is the most, something along the lines of, this is the most detailed environment in a game ever.
I'm not
wow,
sure.
Wow, that's pretty bold.
Yeah.
I initially wasn't that impressed, but then on sort of closer inspection, when you kind of look what's going on in that scene, it was pretty impressive. Like, everything's... there are a lot of quite unique actions going on. There's a lot of like small details that make it feel really alive.
And
given the fact that all of that changes through the day and night system.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see that because they didn't show it at night.
I mean, and it's difficult as well because you can't really get too immersed. I mean, they did the right thing, I think, in showing such a long gameplay demo, because you get to see a lot of like the different, strings to its bow. But I think that yeah, I think the real immersion will come when we have our when we get our hands on it. But I mean, that team is so ambitious.
It's crazy.
The Witcher 3 is just the some of the most ambitious design by a team that size I've ever seen. I think they're awesome. They're insane.
Well, I think what I'm most impressed is the fact that it's of a completely different. It's not a completely different genre, but it's certainly a completely different setting. It's science fiction or near future science fiction. It's first person. It's not third person. It's more GTA and Deus Ex than Witcher.
You know? Yeah.
So it's that. I think that's the thing that most made it look really impressive. When it actually comes out and how it actually looks, how it actually feels to play is another story, of course. But
yeah,
I don't know. It looked pretty solid.
I mean, to me,
what they had so far.
It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I'll watch this out of, you know, to keep up to date. But based on the strength of the concept and their previous work, I'm probably going to buy it.
Yeah.
Regardless of, you know.
The Witcher games, because they've only made the Witcher games. Remember the first Witcher game?
Oh, yes.
It's good, but you can see they've gone from strength to strength, basically.
Yeah, that's
in those three, and three has just
engine.
Hit the pinnacle and the peak of their development process, and obviously now they've felt from the success of that, obviously the money they got from it, but also just the wealth of experience in developing a big AAA game like that successfully, that they would be able to pull off something like Cyberpunk 2077. And the funny thing is that I didn't realize that. Again, like ignorant of some of these things, is that I always thought of cyberpunk as just a genre. Right?
Yeah, I thought it was a term. I had no idea.
I didn't even know that it was based on a sort of pen and paper.
So a tabletop
game. Role-playing system.
Yeah, I had no idea.
A guy called Mike Pondsmith, who, if you go to YouTube on the on CD Projekt Red's web channel, they have a small video about Mike and what his vision was for Cyberpunk 2077. And it's really interesting because it's like nothing. Both him and the genre are like nothing you really expect from when you think about tabletop role-playing games. You think about tabletop role-playing games, you think about D&D and sort of classic sort of Tolkien-esque fantasy. And obviously this is sci-fi, but, and you can tell he has this kind of like passion for this atmosphere of the streets and urban sort of dystopia and dark alleys and neon lit sort of
that sort of areas. Blade like, Runner almost.
Yeah, it's almost kind of Blade Runner. But he seems like a super interesting guy.
I mean, it seems to me like they're trying to stay very close to his vision.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah.
Which is important, but also trying to put their own sort of spin on it, I guess. But I mean, I'm going to buy it. There's a release date for it yet, right? But
No, I don't think so.
But I mean, just based on the strength of The Witcher 3, just incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes, the demo is interesting. Check it out. It's quite long, though. It's like 48 minutes or something. 48 minutes long. What else we got? Oh, a small announcement for people who care about PS Plus and Games for Gold. PS Plus games and Games for Gold. This won't affect you, Simon, unless you actually turn your PlayStation on. with Factorio going strong.
Going strong.
So they've announced
Factorio, my new addiction.
Yeah. They've announced the Games for Gold this month for Xbox Xbox Live Gold membership. You get Prison Architect and Live Lock. And I've heard of Prison Architect. That's on PC as well.
Yeah, Prison Architect.
I've never heard of Live Lock.
No, I haven't either.
You get that. And
Prison Architect's made by Introversion, who did Uplink and Darwinia.
Okay. Yeah. And then for 360 and Xbox One owners, because of the backwards compatibility, you get the Sega Vintage Collection and Lego Star Wars 3 Clone Wars. And if you're a PS Plus gamer, you get... interesting, this... So, go through the... So for Vita and PS4, you get Foul Play and Sparkle 2 for the Vita owners out there on PS4. For PS3 and PS4, you get Another World Anniversary Edition and Cube Director's Cut. Cube spelled Q-U-B-E.
Yeah.
But most interestingly, for PS4 owners, you get God of War 3 remastered and Destiny 2.
Oh, yeah,
on PS4.
Which
is, obviously, Destiny 2's got an expansion.
Yeah, I think that's why.
In September, I don't know when it's out, early September. But that's obviously why. But yeah, I thought I'd include those anyway.
Yeah,
for us console gamers.
Wait a minute, so you get the... I thought PS Plus was just a one system. There's not an extra, like a premium PS Plus or something like that, no?
So it works like Xbox Live Gold now. It used to be on PS3, you could play online for free.
Yeah,
and then you could pay for PS Plus, and they introduced the games for PS
Plus. But these games are only for people who have PS Plus.
Yeah, so if you have PS Plus, you have access to these games. You can add them to your library.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought
and
so.
And as long as your PS Plus is still active, you can access them whenever. Whereas I think with Xbox Live Gold, once you have them, even if your Xbox Live Gold expires. You can still access them, which is pretty
cool. Yeah. I think that's,
As a side note, which I haven't got written down here, but they've added a couple more games to Xbox Live Game Pass.
Okay.
Which is, they've added Quantum Break and a few others. So, yeah, sorry, that's terrible. But that was only announced today, I think. So, yeah, anyway, a small tidbit of news.
Cool.
But for the final two news stories...
No, you've already done one of them.
No, I haven't.
No, we don't. Oh, no, you haven't. Right, no, yes, you're right. Yeah, sorry.
I know what I'm doing. This is a professional outlet. This is podcast one, mate. Don't derail it. Nintendo's Indie Direct. I'll talk about this a little bit. So Nintendo's latest Indie Direct, the Nindies Summer Showcase, had some interesting information for all Switch owners. Basically, to pad out their catalogue of Switch games, if you need anything else to play on the Switch, because there's loads out already. Basically, they announced a ton of indie games coming to Switch, including Hyper Light Drifter, which comes out on the 6th of September. Bastion, and I think Transistor as well, which Bastion comes out on the 13th of September. I think Bastion comes out the same day. Towerfall on the 27th of September. Wasteland 2...
Yeah, which is...
Director's Cut on the 13th of September. Yeah. So these are all in September. And then, of course, Into the Breach, which was stealth dropped, basically, during the Nindies Summer Showcase. They just said it's available now. So that's out now on Switch. This is just a small selection. You can go to either Nintendo's blog or, I think, IGN or places like that have great coverage of everything that they were announced. But... first of all, I want to talk to you a little bit about Into the Breach.
Yep.
Because that's a game you've been trying to get me to buy since it came out.
Yes.
And I haven't because...
You should.
I don't know why I haven't. I think it's because I was adding so many games to my PC back catalogue based on your recommendation.
Do you think you're just going
to
get on Switch?
So I'm thinking about getting on Switch. It's the same price, I think. So for the first time ever, it's the same price on Switch. It's not anymore. So yeah, I want you to talk a little bit about Into the Breach. And also, I want to talk about how interesting it is that so many indie games are coming out on Switch, and also reminisce about a time when indie games were a PC thing, and how they've slowly, almost via osmosis, now they're, the indie game is not really a small thing anymore, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it used to be these small Steam... games available on Steam, and it's become almost like replacing the mid-tier publisher.
That kind of stuff has been happening for a while now. Like,
yeah.
I mean, and also indie games. This is what PC gaming was. Indie gaming in the 80s, right? Essentially,
yeah.
It was just what people would call bedroom coders, bedroom programmers,
and like
which would then become you sort of like. Will Wright, Peter Molyneux, all of those, Sid Meier, and all of those kind of David Braben, Ian Bell, those people, who've now, well, at least most of them, I think, gone on to sort of continue their franchises on to future. But it's just changed. It's just changed so much over the years.
I mean, like,
there was a point I remember being at. I think it was when we were at university. So in the early 2000s, where people were saying things like the death of the bedroom coders, like there are no bedroom coders left anymore because nobody had the means to do that. Everything is run by big games are just run by big publishers. You need a lot of money to make a game, etc., etc., etc. But then that all changed when Xbox Live and similar services came in.
Yeah.
And in fact, my first job out of university was working on a Xbox Live Arcade game, which unfortunately never got released, which is rubbish. but never mind.
Touch of death.
Yes, such is life.
I mean, it's like, kind of ties into what you were saying earlier, though, right? So, like, what Pillars of Eternity 2 is coming out on Switch.
Like, yeah, which
is... That's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
a kickstarted game from an independent developer,
yeah,
who are publishing their own game, I think. Or maybe someone else has published it. But anyway, it's an independent developer. It's essentially an indie game. But, like, you know, Wasteland 2.
Yeah, Wasteland 2.
Wasteland 2
one.
Is coming out on Switch. Director's Cut coming out on Switch. Now, yeah. Like... Yeah. I wouldn't have predicted it.
Yeah.
Games like that.
Yeah, again, like just these like I was saying earlier, like these games that seem to be very much more they're not classic Nintendo format. Like some of them are very much like PC or traditional PC games, like Wasteland 2 is that sort of offshoot of Fallout and the original Fallouts, that is Fallout 1 and 2 and a sort of open world tactics action games like the Jagged Alliance series or games like that, which are, like, they're very much PC, or XCOM, right? Some of the original XCOMs.
Yeah.
Very much PC focused games, and it's not the kind of stuff you would see on Switch. But some of that stuff, especially Into the Breach that you mentioned, just fits Switch so well.
I mean, like, it really surprises me that we haven't had... So, little background on Into the Breach, right? It's made by the guys who made FTL.
Yep.
And I'll let you talk more about it, but can I just say I'm really surprised that FTL hasn't come out on Switch. It seems perfect for me for Switch, because I think it's out on tablet. I think it's out on, like, iPad.
Yeah, maybe it is. I'm not sure.
It just seems crazy to me that it's not out on Switch. Like,
It's... I'll have to actually... I've met but there's only two of them really who work on Into the Breach.
What's the name of their company?
Their company.
Their develop. Yeah. What
is called?
I can't remember.
This is terrible.
But yeah, they're just two guys.
Yeah.
Who I think they made their own engine as well. They're not even working in anyone else's engine.
Yeah. So Subset games.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ. So, what's wrong with me?
Getting old. That's what's wrong with us.
So Matt, the programmer I've met a few times at various conferences through friends of friends. He's a really super nice guy, and he's also usually when he's been doing a talk at. One of the conferences. He actually lives in England now. He lives in, like, York.
Is he American?
He's American, but I think his like, wife's British or something. And it's him and Justin Ma, who is the artist, mainly, and they both design it. And they come from a background of working for... in Shanghai for... Ubisoft Shanghai, maybe
somewhere. Don't want to commit to that, just in case you're wrong.
I can't remember.
Anyway,
they're both very into board games. Then decided to make FTL as a sort of fun project, right? Which then just ballooned into this huge thing.
That became FTL,
amazing. Yeah, I mean. I think probably the one thing to point out is that both FTL and Into the Breach built in the same engine. Are built in Matt's own engine.
It's
not built in Unity.
They don't
or
work
Unreal,
in
or it's
engine.
Not. So, and listening to him talk about this kind of stuff was because people asked him about it. They were talking about asking him about sort of. I think porting was some of the questions that were asked at things like EGX I've been to, And the advantage of him having his own engine is essentially that he has complete control of his engine. He doesn't have to worry about software updates breaking the game because he is the one who updates it.
I mean, it's a great autonomy.
He doesn't have to worry about sort of compatibility. And he's got it essentially future-proofed. But it does mean he has to do all that work himself on the engine. So I imagine that's part of the reason for them not porting as readily
to Switch
and, to Switch and, yeah. and those other platforms. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I mean, it's I didn't even know Into the Breach was coming to Switch, and then they just were like, and it's out now. So, I mean, God knows how long that's been in the pipeline.
Yeah, sort of stealth dropped it, yeah.
Do you want to explain a little bit about what Into the Breach is?
Into the Breach is like a turn-based tactics strategy game, but like a micro version of it.
It's on grids, right?
Yeah, but it's on a very small grid.
8x8 grid or something, or 6x6?
Yeah, I think it's something like that. I think it's 8x8. And it has very classic roguelike elements. So it is essentially permadeath, right? If you've played FTL, there are certain similarities in that you move through regions to an end goal. But there's not a massive amount of... When you actually get down to the gameplay, there's not a massive amount that's similar between FTL and Into the Breach. You control a team of mechs, and usually no more than three mechs that have quite unique abilities. So one has a sort of... One's like an artillery strike. One's like a direct fire cannon. The other one is... again... Can't remember now. And the idea is that there's been a kind of alien invasion. You've got to deal with the invaders in each region. Each region is one of these small 9x9 grids, which just requires a lot of sort of micro strategy to defeat them. So
it's like bite-sized gameplay, right? People are saying it's perfect for the Switch because
So everything's big, chunky. It has some interesting mechanics. It's very much a sort of like rock, paper, scissors set of mechanics to it. Interesting mechanics in that you can hit, when you hit enemies, they are pushed back onto the next tile. Also, if you push one of them back into another one, that also
damages both of them.
Damages both of them. You can hit them back into hazards like fire. You can create fire by firing at wooded areas. You can shove them into water, for example. And most of them would die instantly in water. But you can also use this mechanic for your own advantage. So, for example, with the artillery has an area of effect where it hits the first tile, and then it also has a pushback effect on the tile surrounding that tile. Yeah. So you can actually use it to push your own units out of danger. Right?
Yeah.
So
it's got like a nice pixel art style as well.
Yeah.
Like,
And in a kind of classic roguelike fashion, you have upgrades for your mechs.
They carry on.
New mechs. Yeah, there's always a pilot for the mech, and that pilot can die, and that pilot is permanently dead.
Yeah.
That's the whole permadeath mechanics. It's just really, really nice, neat, tight design. The maps, the regions are actually also procedurally generated to a point, which is something I find, you know, crazy difficult to do if you're trying to design sort of tight experiences that can still always be beaten but are still procedurally generated. And I think they use probably similar to something like Spelunky, where they have a template of where they have set tiles that are permanently
And everything else is
placed, and everything else is sort of procedurally generated around it. You know, the type of tiles they are, and those effects that they have on them. It's really good. I haven't played it in a while, actually.
No, I remember you playing it a lot when it first came out on PC, and I think I'll be picking it up on Switch at some
point. But I kind of want to play it again now. Just really want to get back into it again. It has quite a lot of replayability as well.
I just thought it was interesting that Nintendo. I mean, not a lot of PlayStation news, not a lot of PlayStation chat this week. I'm upset about that. that's my area of expertise. But it was interesting. Nintendo, they do these indies directs sometimes, and they're doing whole directs now, just dedicated to indie games coming out. And like the Wii U would never have got that kind of support. It's just kind of an interesting time. From an analytical perspective, I think it's kind
of. And there's so many of those games that really suit the Switch format really well.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense.
I mean, I'm not sure how Wasteland 2 is going to work on the Switch.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or Pillars of Eternity. I mean, it'll be amazing, but like.
You can. I imagine it's just using a lot of the pause functions.
I guess. I mean, and also, you know, the sleep function on Switch is usually really well implemented.
Mm.
So you can just pick up and go and carry on whenever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, crazy, a crazy time for Switch. Bizarre.
Yeah.
Our last item of news leads into another thing that I think we should talk about. So, this item of news, when I was collating the news for this week's show, it led to a really interesting conversation that I think we need to touch upon. So, the news is that Far Cry 5 has added a New Game Plus to its game. So basically, you can now restart the game in New Game Plus with all of your content, all of your money, weapons, companions, and they've also added a new difficulty setting, Infamous difficulty, which is supposed to be even harder, which assumingly is for New Game Plus. And so full patch notes for that are available on the Ubisoft blog. But why this is really interesting is because I told Simon this in preparation for the show, and Simon had no fucking idea what New Game Plus meant.
I do actually. I feel like that this entire podcast has been a lot of me going, I don't know what that is.
Yes.
So and it doesn't really that good.
He literally was like, you were literally like, New Game Plus. Yeah. Like the words didn't belong together.
What is this?
So,
newfangled.
But then we asked a good developer friend of ours, who's a very, very experienced developer, way more experienced than Simon.
Yes.
who, you know, he's worked on Black Mesa and loads of other things. And he didn't know what New Game Plus was either.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's a primarily PC gamer. So
I think we came to the conclusion this may be a PC gaming thing.
It's a console
thing.
Versus PC
thing. Gamer thing.
So, yeah. I mean, for people who don't know, a New Game Plus was a term coined by Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
The classic JRPG that everyone should play. That's it. That's all. Everyone in the world should
96,
play
96, right.
And they've that's out on PC now, and they've fixed it apparently. So when it came out on PC, it had the mobile look about it, like the skin of the mobile version. So people were upset, but apparently Square Enix have gone in and made it basically like the DS and SNES version now. So pick it up on PC. But that's a fucking amazing game. But that was the first game to coin the phrase, even though other games had had the ideas implemented before. But New Game Plus, which is essentially just, for those who don't know, it's you can restart the game and carry over most of your progress or elements of your progress. So Resident Evil does it a lot. A lot of Capcom and Konami games do it. You know, and it's interesting because a lot of games have been adding it recently. Dishonored 2 added it. Final Fantasy 15 added it.
The thing is, they don't call it New Game Plus.
Well, they have. Yeah, they have.
But not in Dishonored, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What?
Dishonored 2, yeah. They've added New Game Plus, and it's called New Game Plus.
It's called New Game Plus in Dishonored 2?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. This is what I mean. Like, it's interesting, because like, the concept wasn't completely lost on you, but the term...
The term,
and
yeah.
I don't want to get too caught up in...
Yeah, the concept.
You know,
I mean, the concept has been in stuff for years.
But yeah, it's interesting, I think, to note that there are now terms and terminologies that really have only... that kind of have been born out of console or PC gaming.
Yeah.
Because the main reason you don't know what this is because you're a PC gamer.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that they're adding it to new games as well.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of stuff like, the thing is, it's not so much now because, like part of what we've been talking about this whole podcast about things becoming more and ever more multi-format, multi-genre, terms like AFK, right? That you would use in MMOs, right? Like World of Warcraft when it came out in 2005, and you could even do the slash AFK.
We're not even command, out of right? Like people say that, not even out of keyboard now. Like console gaming, that's ubiquitous term across all types of gaming. I just want to know what your thoughts are on New Game Plus as well, because it feels like a really console gamey thing for me. To have this like system where you're constantly playing in repetition.
No, it's not.
But I mean, like the term is appropriate.
The term is something I haven't heard before.
But I'm interested in the history of New Game Plus in PC gaming because I don't know I don't know.
Well, I suppose it depends how tight your definition of it is.
Well, I guess the roguelike genre is basically New Game Plus.
Yeah.
Now is a game mode, right? Game type.
Yeah. Because you can think of the much more open-ended PC games but that's not really what New Game Plus is, right? It's about replayability after things have changed. It's not like playing a new game of Civilization and having a new. It's not the same thing.
Yeah,
but it's more about. I suppose a classic example would be like an RPG that you can then play again with all of the upgraded.
It's a leveling up, right?
Yeah,
it's leveling up.
I don't know what the first one is to do that, or what would arguably have been the first game to do that would be.
I think it's a really, really good mechanic when it's implemented properly.
Yeah,
like it can make the game so addictive, make any game super addictive. If you like in Resident Evil, the remake, man, New Game Plus, or in Dark Souls, because they ratchet up the difficulty each time.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe the kind of games you play don't have a lot of New Game Plus as well.
No, I'm like well aware of what it is and what the concept is. I just never heard that term before.
Which is really weird.
Yeah.
So weird. It's so weird. I just wanted to, I thought that was amusing that you'd never heard of it and that several other people we asked had either heard of it or hadn't.
I mean, I'd never even read it anywhere.
It's crazy.
Which is weird. Unless I just have and skimmed through it and never thought anything about it.
Or your memory's going.
Yeah.
You never know. Senility.
Getting on.
Well, that's it for the news. I don't have any news.
That's it. Well, leave it there.
Well, just cut it off. Leave it there.
Done. Bye.
Wow, amazing.
We should probably. I think we're going to stop here.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's listening, thanks. I don't even know.
To the first podcast. To this is proper rough, isn't it? This is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, apologies in advance for any. Oh, I don't even know what this is going to sound like. I've got no fucking idea. Like, what if we've just been recording one of us? It's completely fucked. Like,
it's just a crazy person talking to themselves.
Just, it could be. We don't even notice. We upload it. It's just fucking one person chatting shit. The format and the topics and stuff will, I'm sure, evolve.
We're going to try and do this twice a month at least.
At the moment, yeah. And then maybe scale it up after that. And also maybe add some other podcasts and video reviews and anything else.
I am on holiday soon.
Yes, yeah, so someone's decided to go on holiday straight after us launching. Thanks, mate.
Feel free, if you haven't heard this podcast on YouTube, then we will be on YouTube and there will be appropriate game footage to accompany our dulcet tones.
I hope so. At least something to look at. We're hopefully hitting YouTube and I don't know about we're going to try and get on iOS and SoundCloud and things like that, but we're still kind of looking into the logistics.
Yep.
But yeah, we should be on everything.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at Black Spine Media. And we have a website at blackspinemedia.com.
Indeed. And also feel free to follow and like and subscribe and whatever the fuck it is you do on YouTube. I feel kind of corny just saying it.
No,
it really does
terrible.
Help. And it really does help us out. And also feel free to comment. Nothing mean.
Just good things.
That's
please.
A mistake.
Yeah.
No, but I mean,
feel free to praise us.
Any feedback, any questions, anything you want Simon to tell you he doesn't know about.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Forget about. Like senility setting in, or anything you want me not to know about because it's PC related. I don't know anything about PC gaming. But yeah, is that it? Are we done?
Yep, that's it.
Cool.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.